big show for you here today. We're looking at what we got right and especially what we got wrong at the wide receiver and tight end position. Tons to get into, tons of embarrassing things that I said. My God, I'm supposed to be good at this wide receiver thing. Got a couple of whiffs to discuss what we learned from those misses and the hits as well. Plus, we've got a dynasty debate section where we dive into your questions to the mailbag. All that and more coming up on today's show. Let's get into it. What's going on, everybody? I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Forecast, and it is a hell of a day to talk ball. And joining me to do just that is our guy, the number one ranker in the entire known universe. It is Justin Boone. Boone, how tired are you of being praised for this so far?
It's gotten to that point. It's just unnecessary, right? Like, all I needed to see was my name at the top of the rankings list that I won. And now we're on to 2026. And we had Jason Klobaka, our manager. He was talking about it with me. And I said to him, like, this is old news. Like, I need to move on. I need to focus on what we're going to do for 2026. And he joked that I'm going to do like the Michael Jordan thing and find some new slight or some new reason why I have to prove myself next year. And he's probably right. I'll be working on that. I'll come up with something, I'm sure, to motivate me. But no, it's been a great week since we found that out on last week's show. Gotten to celebrate, see some family, see some friends. And the Bills got a win, man. I did not feel great about that game. I wasn't sure how it was going to go. They pulled it off. And now they got a matchup with the Broncos where, again, I think it's going to be really close. Denver's a great team. But I think they got a chance to pull this one off as well. So exciting times all around.
I'm picking them to win that game. Spoiler alert for tomorrow's preview show with Joel Smith, but I am picking them to win that game against the Denver Broncos. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be competitive. So hopefully I didn't just curse your team there with my bad vibes with that single pick. But no, it's good. I'm really excited about today's show where we're not going to be talking about the playoffs, because for the month of January here, Boone and I are essentially on these Wednesday shows kind of taking a look back, doing a little bit of an autopsy of the fantasy season that was. We did it last week with what we got right and wrong at the quarterback and running back positions. Today, we're going to look at what we got right and wrong about the wide receiver and tight end position. We have some receipts. We have a ton of clips to play, which I don't know about you, Boone, but the one thing I hate more than hearing myself talk, which I already hate, is hearing myself talk about things I've got hilariously wrong. And it's going to be super uncomfortable for me today here, because wide receiver is supposed to be in my wheelhouse. And I know we've got some things that I said that I really regret. So I'm buckled in for a very uncomfortable episode.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. Like, we have to do this, though, right? We have to go over this stuff. We got to try to figure out what we can pull from it, the good and the bad. And I think you were doing a great job of that on last week's show, like twisting it into potential lessons. I'm going to try to do more of that as we go today. But there's definitely things that we can pull from the season in terms of like what we learned and what we can do moving forward. There's also a few where like I think we have some blame to like push elsewhere. Like, I am happy to take the L's, but there's a couple of these where I am going to point the finger at some other people as we go through it. So let's get to it, man.
Yeah, the important thing is never to pat yourself on the back, for sure. Like, learning how you got it right is important. Same with learning how you got it wrong. The point here is not to just flog ourselves in public about, wow, what a bunch of idiots we are. We're going to do that. I'm definitely going to do that. But also the important thing is, you know, how do we take that going forward? And like, were we wrong? Were we wrong for the right reasons, or, you know, the whole deal? We'll do that. Of course, we also are going to finish the show with your dynasty debates. We have five to get into today. So very excited about that. But without further ado, let's get into the wide receiver position and what we got wrong. Like I said, we have a ton of clips here today. This first one is about a player who was a little bit newsy today on social media, so that's a good timing here. Let's talk. This is actually three players here in the first one. These are all, I believe they're all potentially me here. We'll see, but these are all three rookie wide receivers. So let's take a listen to what we had to say. Jaguars wide receiver slash cornerback Travis Hunter played 11 out of 12 snaps with the first team offense in preseason and zero with the first team defense. He did mix in on some defensive snaps after that. I think this is just confirmation of what we should know at this point, that the Jaguars view Travis Hunter as an offensive first player. He is rotating in the slot. He doesn't really see the field in two receiver sets because they have De'Ami Brown there to do that stuff. I don't really think that's going to matter very much. This is mostly an 11 personnel offense. And the reality is when Travis Hunter's on the field, he's going to be getting the football. So I want to get a little higher on Travis Hunter in my rankings. You guys know just how special of a receiver prospect I thought this guy was. I want to get Travis Hunter on some teams. I want to be aggressive on this player. I've been aggressive on him since the moment I charted his first three games for reception perception. They might have thought back in April when Emeka Buka was drafted to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, like, all right, I might get like a Jackson Smith and Jigba, Roma Dunze rookie season where he's stuck behind some other veteran receivers and maybe it's next year. Well, now I don't think you're going to have to be patient for this guy. I think he's going to just hit the ground running immediately. I mentioned Jalen McMillan earlier. He is now placed on IR. We know Chris Godwin has not even started jogging on a separate field yet. Man, it really went pretty quick from why did they draft that guy to thank God we drafted that guy. They're going to need him to hit the ground running. Yeah, I'm going, and this is again, this is a guy I definitely want you to draft. He's one of my favorite picks in round 10 right now. I just wrote a favorite picks piece for the website. My round 10 selection was Matthew Golden of the Green Bay Packers. 113th overall ADP on Matthew Golden right now. What if Matthew Golden just emerges as the top guy here? And right now, I love Jaden Reed, but Jaden Reed's in a walking boot. Like right now, I do think Matthew Golden does project as the number one wide receiver of this team. Okay, so I think that just like the last one is was the one that I got a red face on a little bit here about the Matthew Golden thing. Now, in my defense, Boone, it was a round 10 pick. The deal with round 10 picks is they might not work out, but favorite pick in round 10, Matthew Golden, 29 receptions in his rookie season, didn't score his first touchdown until this past week in the playoffs, so it did not help your fantasy teams. We'll unpack all three of those, but I think we can definitely say that Matthew Golden, that was bad. That was a whiff, and you take your shots in ambiguous wide receiver rooms. Some of them are going to miss. That was a big miss in Matthew Golden here.
Yeah, and shout out to the producers here because there's definitely clips of me talking up Travis Hunter. There's definitely clips of me talking up Emeka Buka. They didn't use those. They just threw you under the bus on this one. I will say totally I don't think there's any clips of me talking up Matthew Golden, though. I wasn't really in on him, for a variety of reasons, that they had so many pieces there that, you know, we know they spread the ball around. Didn't really love him as a prospect either, and yeah, that one just came to be, right? 25 yards or less in almost 60% of his games. Like you said, no touchdowns, as people watching can see on the screen there. He only cracked 10 fantasy points once during the regular season. And even if, like, Romeo Doubs leaves in free agency, because Doubs is a free agent here, you still have Christian Watson, who this year kind of looked like he was separating himself a bit as potentially, like, a real number one receiver there. Jaden Reed, who, despite being hurt before the season there, comes back. Kind of gets back to doing some Jaden Reed things. I think he's definitely a better player than Golden as well. And then Dontavian Wicks is still around. And I mean, if he could ever learn how to catch properly and hold on to some of those balls, we know he's a pretty talented guy as well. On top of the fact that Tucker Kraft, who I think we'll talk about later in the show, we hope he'll come back healthy and he's going to be heavily involved. So I don't know that I see a real path towards Golden being like quality fantasy asset moving forward, unless there's like a bunch of injuries potentially. I don't know if you feel differently, but for that one, I think that certainly was a pretty rough call in hindsight there.
Oh yeah, definitely. And again, it's the thing with him was like take him in the late rounds. It wasn't like a big flag plant necessarily, but I was a little bit ahead of consensus because I just like taking shots at these ambiguous wide receiver rooms, but I would rather have not had to say like he was my favorite round 10 pick or whatever. And the funny thing, you mentioned, you know, kind of not loving him as a prospect. I was pretty much in the middle with Matthew Golden. I mean, there are some data folks who really look like they've got this one right, that because of his lack of college production, he was not going to be a needle moving NFL player. Look, he's a rookie. So I'm not saying his career is over by any means, but that really decreased the odds that he would be like a highly targeted player because he wasn't that productive in college. And now there were some other film people that were very, very high on Matthew Golden and maybe potentially had him as the wide receiver one in the class. I thought he was like a third tier prospect. So I kind of came down somewhere in the middle there. And in a weird way, it's like I almost hedged against my own talent evaluation with Matthew Golden taking like a shot on a talented round one player in an ecosystem that obviously can be really good in that Packers offense. So that's something for me to remember going forward. It's like the most important thing is the prospect evaluation, which I actually think transitions us really well into Emeka Ibuka, which it's kind of hard to say, like, were we right or were we wrong on Ibuka, Boone? Because he ended up being a really great pick in the first half of the season, maybe even like the first 33% of the season, 40% of the season. Maybe not a full half of the year, but he ends up finishing as wide receiver 31 in fantasy points per game, which is funny because I look back at my rankings, I actually had him as wide receiver 32, which at the time was still a flag plant based on ADP, and he ends up kind of being exactly that. Not that you want to draft, you know, to you don't want to draft a guy and be like, oh, I got his ranking right or whatever. That's not the whole point of the thing. You want him to be a meaningful difference maker, which for the most part, Ibuka, for the vast majority of the season, absolutely was not. And I think coming back to the prospect evaluation for this one, Boone, you know, Ibuka, and we talk about this kind of later towards the season, you put that awesome weeks 1-5 stretch aside when it looked like, oh my God, he's on this rocket ship upward. He was a good prospect, a really, really good prospect that I thought was more of a tier two guy as opposed to not like a tier one prospect, but a tier two prospect who could be a really good long time number two wide receiver. Ultimately, if you kind of forget how he produced in the big like early bucket and then nothing down the stretch, if you just stretch that over the course of his rookie season, he kind of had that type of rookie year from a prospect perspective. So I'm not really sure like how to bucket him in terms of hit, miss, whatever. Just such a bizarre season for him down the stretch.
I mean, I think in terms of 2026, I do think I'm taking the L. Like, I think this is a miss for us. And it seems like we were geniuses in those first 5 weeks, because we can go back to the very first show we did and I was highlighting him. We were talking him up. But yeah, those first 5 weeks to be the wide receiver 3 overall. And then after that, from week 6 on, the wide receiver 57, talked a million times about how it wasn't even like he was boom or bust. There was like one boom in there. Other than that, it was under 45 yards in 7 of his last 8 games. You didn't even want him in your lineup. You probably regretted hanging on to him all season in redraft. Dynasty, a different story. I think for Ibuka, yeah, I do have high hopes for him. Long term, still having a meaningful role in this offense. I think what he flashed early in the season, we're going to be able to see that at some point in his career in the future. I think he's going to be good. Matthew Golden, not so much. I mean, the history of receivers like Golden who don't really produce in their first year, it's not great. Like, there's some that still come along, but guys like that don't have production in their first year, it's pretty scary. And I think in Dynasty, you're almost better off to like sell someone like that, even if you're taking 50 cents on the dollar. Like, I've started to do that in recent years, where if that guy doesn't hit, if that receiver doesn't hit in year one, and you don't have reason to like think it's necessarily going to turn around quickly, like, you drafted him probably with a first round rookie pick in Dynasty last year, I would probably sell him for a second round rookie pick in Dynasty if you can get it right now. Like, I would just get off that train as quick as possible, where Ibuka, you actually might be able to almost buy low because of the way the season went for him. And I do think, you know, he's going to be fine long term, but there's still a lot of questions, right? Like, when you look at this receiver core next year, Mike Evans is going to turn 33. We don't really know what his future is going to be, whether he's going to be with the team or whether he's going to retire. Chris Godwin, you hope that like the further removed he gets from his injuries, maybe he can get back to something a little closer to the Chris Godwin that we know and love for fantasy. Jalen McMillan, we talked about either last week or the week before as somebody who became this like sneaky option in that receiver core and actually started playing more than Ibuka down the stretch, started getting more targets. Like, he's going to factor in as well here. So you would hope that next season we're going to see Ibuka start strong and we're not going to have to worry about this all year long. But right now, like, his status, his value is up in the air. And for redraft, I think I mentioned this on the show before, that when I initially did my rankings, my first top 50, and then, you know, from there I've expanded it. Now people can go check that out on Yahoo. I don't have any of the Bucks receivers inside the top 50. I just am pretty scared right now trying to figure out what the value is going to be in that group. So it's kind of just a stay away. And we'll see how this shakes out during the offseason, and then we'll go from there. And of course, I'm going to adjust those rankings a bajillion times here before we get to draft season. But right now, I'm kind of just playing a really cautious game with those Bucks receivers.
I think that's fair right now. And, you know, this is going to come up in our next conversation here, too. It's like we don't have to make final decisions, and teams are not making final decisions on what their players are going to be here in January. We got a long way to go. We got a lot of things to see, a lot of players to add to rosters, leave rosters. It's a whole thing. So we don't have to know these answers right now. But I do think right now, I actually think from a dynasty perspective, he's not somebody I would say like go out and buy. He's not somebody I would sell either as a book. I think he's just like a guy, if I had him, I'd hold on to him. Because again, I'm not sure like what the ceiling is. And you mentioned some of the ambiguity of the situation there. So I do like the player. I still really like the player a lot. But it definitely just a bizarre ending to his rookie season. I do want to talk about Travis Hunter real quick, because the funny thing is, if you go back, if we listen to that clip, a lot of what I said was pretty much right. Until the end part where it was, I want to get higher in my rankings on this guy. Like, that's the part. It's like, no, probably shouldn't have said that. But he was viewed as an offense first player early on in his rookie season by the Jacksonville Jaguars. They played him a ton. That preseason usage actually was pretty telling. The thing is, it just didn't really happen for him from a fantasy standpoint. I think what I regret there, Boone, is probably thinking about how, and this is why the Travis Hunter injury is so annoying, because of the timing that it came in, because he was a guy that was going to take, and I wish I had emphasized this more in draft season, that he was a guy that was going to take a little bit of time to get going, because he came from this really rudimentary college offense where he wasn't doing a lot of advanced NFL things. Also, he was moonlighting between cornerback and wide receiver, double dipping there. So it was going to be a slow ramp up for him always. And then even James Gladstone, when he was talking to the media today, said, yeah, right as we were planning on him being a featured piece on offense and a package player on defense, I'm paraphrasing there a little bit, he ended up getting hurt, and we had to adjust from there. And then after that, they traded for Jacoby Myers, had this big breakout from Parker Washington, and they still expect him to play on both sides of the ball. But right now, Boone, they said in this press conference today, with the way contracts are expiring, we have big, I'm paraphrasing, but we have bigger needs at corner than we do at wide receiver. So they expect him to obviously play a heavy role at cornerback next season. So I'm not really sure what to do with Travis Hunter, you know, right now at all. But this is another one we have to watch where the offense like plays out in the offseason.
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely lost value. And like I said earlier, this is another one where I feel like I was with you on this. I feel like I was drafting Hunter a lot of places. I was recommending Hunter. And the ceiling is still there. Like, make no mistake, right? Like, this guy can still be an outstanding player in an offense that took huge leaps this year. Trevor Lawrence taking huge leaps this year. I think generally very excited about that passing attack. And yet, like you mentioned, like, you can go through it, right? Like, it's not just Jacoby Myers showing up and them extending him, him being a part of what they want to do moving forward. Parker Washington coming on. Brian Thomas Jr., maybe that's like the one piece that we'll keep an eye on this offseason, because before the deadline,
yes,
there were rumors that he could potentially get traded. And it did kind of seem like maybe he was the one guy in that receiving core that didn't totally find his place and get comfortable in that Liam Cohen system. So maybe he gets moved in the offseason and that kind of clears more of a path for Hunter. But I agree that it's got to be concerning when you look at this depth chart for next year. If everyone is still there, I now go into next year thinking Hunter's probably going to play more corner than we saw this year. And that's a problem. That's a legitimate problem, where this season we did nail the fact that, yeah, he's going to be used more on offense. All the sort of little quotes that were trickling out kind of pointed towards that. Liam Cohen kind of suggested that was going to be the case before the season, and that's what we saw. So yeah, that's another one where I'm probably holding Hunter as well, like, yes, because that ceiling is still there, but I feel very nervous about it. And I agree with the poll that we put up there earlier, that if I'm looking at this group, I probably feel most confident that Emeka Egbuka is going to return value next year versus these other two guys, because I think there's a lot of question marks around Hunter, especially for 2026.
Yeah, what I'll say about Hunter is that, you know, again, the quote from Gladstone today was, you can expect more of an emphasis on Hunter's work at cornerback, which, number one, doesn't mean he's only going to play corner, which I think is kind of what the internet ran with it there. And he mentioned, you know, if you look at our current, you know, expiring contracts, where they do have some guys who are obviously going to hit free agency at cornerback than they do more so a wide receiver. But that's the roster here in January. We'll see what it looks like. And I like, they obviously had a lot of success with Myers, who's going to turn 29 next year. Washington had a great year. BTJ, we'll see. The worst thing that you can do as an offense is just assume what happened last year is going to happen again this year. Look at the Atlanta Falcons. They're like, oh yeah, we're fine at wide receiver. Drake London, awesome. Darnell Mooney had a great year. We'll be fine. We don't need to add anybody. And that blew up in their faces. I think Jacksonville's smart. They'll still play him a lot at wide receiver. But from a fantasy standpoint, right now, if we go into it and he's mostly playing corner and he's just kind of package play wide receiver, that's obviously not somebody that you can remotely trust. So this will be something we will track throughout the course of the offseason. I don't want to say anything with certainty about it just yet, other than I agree with you that he does still have the talent to be that awesome wide receiver, but he actually has to play there and develop there, which is a key thing that is just probably not going to happen at this point.
I'm smiling because I'm wondering what this conversation would be like if he didn't have the 8-catch, 101 yard, one touchdown game in that last game before the injury, right? If that doesn't happen, this is an entirely different conversation, but he had that one big performance and it did seem like they were going to ramp him up from that point on. That might be like the main thing we're hanging on to at the moment in terms of keeping his fantasy value anywhere near it where it was last year, which it definitely has taken a drop.
I just think about the alternate universe if he never got hurt, you know, like if he doesn't, I mean, like what too. Does that look like? You know, it's definitely one of the biggest what if moments of this past season. Okay, let's get to another clip here and let's talk some second year wide receivers. We had some optimism they could make a leap. Didn't really happen. Let's take a listen. I do think the Marvin Harrison Jr. usage has to change. There's no question about that. I think it will. And I'm not talking like full-scale turn him into CeeDee Lamb or something, although there are peep metrics from their rookie seasons are actually kind of similar. They're
really
not that dissimilar from a build perspective.
His route running would kind of be unlocked by being a slot guy. I mean, he's a really good route runner. That might open up there, you know?
We need some change in his alignment just to be a guy that's not 80-80 outside on the line of scrimmage players. Like the guys that I charted last year that did that, it's like Quentin Johnston, Nico Collins, badass, of course. George Pickens, DK Metcalf, Cortland Sutton. We don't want to use Marvin Harrison Jr. like that. I didn't say like Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, AJ Brown. Like nobody uses their number one receiver like this anymore. So that does need to change.
We are in Vegas. This is where dreams come true, right? So with me. We're going to play out a scenario where my dream comes true, all right? The Buffalo Bills win the Super Bowl, but that's not that bold. They win the Super Bowl based on the breakouts of Keon Coleman and Dalton Kincaid this year, two players that I think a lot of people have already maybe written off or given up on. They are still very, very young players, all right? We have two guys here that, you know, I see you laughing over that already.
Colin is in the comments. Colin just said, roast him in my ear. Oh, good memories. Good memories.
Oh, that's too good.
First of all, Marvin Harrison Jr., I mean, yeah, flat out didn't happen at all. Not even close. Huge whiff. It wasn't used that way. Obviously did not have a breakout season. I don't even know if we need to relitigate that one. But you just flat out not is not what happened. We'll see what happens going forward. Keon Coleman, you mentioned Dalton Kincaid in there. So I think we kind of got to give you like 50-50 credit because Kincaid had a breakout season there, Boone.
I mean, I guess when I hear that, I'm thinking like from the creator of JJ McCarthy is going to have a breakout season comes Keon Coleman's going to take a big step forward and help the Bills win the Super Bowl.
It was a bold predictions show. It was a bold predictions show.
Yeah, it's true. They were both bold predictions and bold predictions that I missed on terribly. So maybe the lesson learned here next year is like follow the rankings, trust like the week in, week out accuracy. When you see me give a bold prediction, maybe don't listen. Maybe look the other way because I definitely got those two big time wrong. And I'm not like taking any pride in the Dalton Kincaid one. Like, yes, he started the season strong before he had the injury, was the tight end 5 in fantasy points per game. But the usage didn't really change like the efficiency did. He started to hit on some of those plays that I think I even talked about probably during that show from the clip was from that last year. It kind of seemed like the opportunities were there and Josh Allen weirdly would like miss him wide open downfield on these big plays. This year, we started to hit on a few more of those, started to score some touchdowns, and yet big time durability concerns about him moving forward because this is another season where he got derailed by injury. Keon Coleman, this is the one where like I feel that, and I'm happy to take the L's, like I said, but this one, I gotta point some of the blame to basically everybody around the Bills, his teammates, the coaches, the beat writers. They were all talking him up. Like there was that Deion Dawkins press conference where Deion Dawkins was like going out of his way to be like, Keon's just a completely different player this year. And you know, he's gonna shock everybody and everything. And it was like the complete opposite of that. And it wasn't even that he didn't improve on the flashes that we saw during that rookie season. It went even further, right? It went to the point where we kind of found out, like, doesn't seem like he's doing the things behind the scenes that are going to help him improve and develop and get better. And that led to him eventually being a healthy scratch multiple times. So yeah, it's about as bad as it can be when you go from hoping that that guy can emerge as a meaningful piece in a passing attack that desperately needs a receiver. And I mean, he's going to get another opportunity here with the Bills so shorthanded in the playoffs. But yeah, Keon Coleman, it's looking more and more like his future in Buffalo is very cloudy, you know, if not maybe coming to an end after this season. And really him as like a starting player in the NFL, I think, is big time in question now after the season that we just saw.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's like got a meme after him right now. You know, the Cam Newton viral TikTok. Have you seen that one where he's like, I love cookies? Like that was the highlight of Keon Coleman's season outside of that fourth quarter in week one. So that's definitely not great for Keon Coleman. Yeah, the only thing that'll be shocking about him is when he can show up to a meeting on time. Thanks for that, Deion Dawkins. But yeah, the lesson there is never listen to teammates when they hype up their own guys. I'll never forget when I did an interview with Stephon Diggs where I was, especially when it comes to like fantasy stuff, I was like talking to him about Gabe Davis. He's like, yeah, you should get Gabe Davis in fantasy. Absolutely. He goes, I don't know how the draft works, but you should get Gabe Davis in fantasy. I'm like, well, I think we're going to go ahead and like take that off the recommendation. I don't know about the draft, but you should get him in. Okay. Well, we probably don't need to worry about that. That's another thing to me. This is one thing that's always on my radar. These contested catch guys, which Coleman obviously has the ability to make outrageous catches. They always end up getting overrated in training camp. In mini camp, it's like the twitchy little small route runners, which, by the way, hand up, I end up falling for those guys quite often. Got some Josh Downs takes that I want back, not because he's a mini camp star, but you know, like those little twitchy small route runners always get overhyped in OTAs and mini camp palace practice. Then when the pads come on, it's like, oh, the contested catch guy, he's always getting way overhyped in training camp. So that's something to remember for all of us when we get to August. Something we all need to remember is some of the players I have a tough time letting go of. Here's one where I just can't help myself with this particular player. Let's take a listen. Listen, Bateman had what, between 700 and 800 yards last year? If I'm looking at like non-rookie wide receivers that go in the hundreds, I think he's one of my favorite bets to get to like over 900 this year. There's just more room for Rashad Bateman to grow. The Ravens are projected to be like a top two offense by every source. And yet their number two wide receiver goes deep in the hundreds in fantasy football drafts. And he is a good player. 64 wide receivers had 40 plus catches last year at Faraz. Rashad Bateman had the highest percentage of those catches go for a first down or a touchdown. Super explosive, over 40% explosive play rate. Over 900 yards, Rashad Bateman had 224 yards. That ranked, speaking of deep in the hundreds, 110th at the wide receiver position this past season. He was behind such luminaries as Deami Brown, Jalen Lane, Isaac Tesla. Speaking of another player I was way too high on when they came into the league, Jahan Dotson had more receiving yards than Rashad Bateman, who had 19 catches on the entire season. Boone, I think, listen, you know, late round pick, whatever. You light that one on fire. It's fine. My lesson of this one is like these guys that, you know, were prospects I liked who had disappointed. And Bateman did have a good year last year in 2024. He did have a nice season.
Yeah.
But that was mostly because the offense was so good. And obviously the offense wasn't that good this season. You know, Lamar Jackson obviously injured, the whole deal. We know how that went. My lesson on this is that these guys that, you know, people already know I like, I don't got to talk about them in fantasy. Because you know what? If they end up having good years, people will be like, oh, yeah, Harmon, he likes Rashad Bateman.
Your name's already attached. You don't got to talk
about it. Yeah, name's already attached. No need to double down from the fantasy standpoint. That will happen naturally. So I'm just not going to talk about these guys anymore. I'm going to try.
I mean, we also got it wrong that this Ravens offense was going to be, what did you say in the clip, a top two offense there?
Top two,
We all thought that was going to be the case. That was not the case. And that was a big reason why I'm pretty sure Bateman had 9 touchdowns the year before, right? That's kind of what was boosting his stock that year. But the whole offense struggled. So you look at basically the numbers top to bottom, and not many guys were putting up ceiling outcomes. And Bateman happened to put up what basically amounts to a floor outcome in that one. And I think now we can look at him as like probably still a good real life contributor. Like, I think you're right about all those takes on him. just fantasy wise, I don't know that it's going to happen for him here, right? He's just a real depth piece. You're going to need a bunch of injuries to clear a path for him now. It's an unfortunate one where that whole like ecosystem around him just completely fell apart, and none of those like little pieces on the Ravens were having, you know, the big moments that they were having the year before. It happens.
And I will say from a real life perspective too, like I think I appreciate what Bateman does. He's a really, really good route runner, but like that's about it. He's a really, really good route runner. And for the most part, like I think they kind of need to do better at that second wide receiver position. So I will not be talking fantasy Rashad Bateman hype in the year 2026. Okay, let's get to the last clip here. Our only tight end one. Let's take a listen to what we had to say about Kyle Pitts. So Kyle Pitts. Okay. Why is it not going to happen for Kyle Pitts?
I think he's just too inconsistent of a player.
Big sigh.
Big sigh. Because I want him to work so badly. He's still young, but why is not working?
I've heard.
First off, I think Drake. Yeah, I know, right? Fire Arthur Smith. I think Drake London is, first off, going to be always the focal point of this offense. I think Pitts has just turned into, he's just not good enough of a blocker, and he's just not dynamic enough of a receiver, because all of his best receiving routes, we talked about the Tyler Warren discussion. 10-yard route, find the soft spot right there. Pitts is a strider, so he needs routes that let him go downfield, cross the field, runway routes. So, okay, now we're already taking off routes off the menu that he can run. In theory, he can run other routes, but it's not as effective as, why don't we just put, well, Darnell Mooney, if he was healthy, Ray McCloud on it. Why don't we just have Drake London run another route from the slot? You know, so it's just, he's almost a, like, best almost used as like a sacrificial X.
I think Nate was kind of right about a lot of that stuff, because it took Drake London going down for Kyle Pitts to really have his massive games. He finishes, though, with 88 receptions, 928 yards, 5 touchdowns, tight end 2 in fantasy, which is crazy because it was really just that end of the season. So ultimately, yes, it did happen for Kyle Pitts. It took a circuitous route to get there.
Yeah, I mean, great to see him doing meaningful things on a football field again. I think we're all rooting for Kyle Pitts, even though we've all been burned so many times in fantasy. But we've mentioned it already here. The Drake London thing was everything. And this happens to a lot of tight ends. Like Mike Gesicki, even if you go back to like the Dolphins days, it happened with him. We see it with Cade Otton the last couple of years with the Bucks, where they don't have big stats until you see injuries in the receiving core. And then all of a sudden they become week in and week out like tight end one options. That's kind of what happened to Pitts here, even though his ceiling is just much higher than those other guys, because it's a tale of two seasons. The first 11 weeks, Drake London, you know, was out there most of the time. I think he missed one game in there. Pitts was the tight end 21 in fantasy points per game during that stretch. Seems like forever ago based on the way he ended the season, because once London got hurt, and there was a game in here as well, I think it was week 16, where they like eased London back in. So a bunch of games where he missed, one where they eased him back in. Pitts was the tight end 3 in fantasy points per game in the final 8 weeks of the fantasy calendar, right? He only topped 10 fantasy points 6 times. 4 of those happened when London was out of the lineup, and one more happened in that game where he was limited his first game back. So 5 of the 6 games where he topped 10 fantasy points are directly tied to Drake London not being completely available or not available at all. I think that's the story here. So does it give us hope that he can go into free agency now and become a meaningful player somewhere else? Absolutely. But that's really going to depend on the landing spot, what kind of other options, what kind of target competition they have there. I'm not just immediately back in on Kyle Pitts. I think it is going to take some things to kind of line up correctly for him. But this is still a positive sign for his outlook that he was able to do this when the opportunity arose, because there were opportunities in other years recently where he didn't. And whether it was injury or whether it was usage, he didn't come through with a consistent stretch like this.
Yeah, we'll have to see what happens with Kyle Pitts in free agency. But the lesson there is definitely for a tight end, you've got to be the number one or number two target on your team. We talked about that a lot in August. It's going to actually lead us to one of the tight ends that we got right later on here. And Kyle Pitts, once Drake London was removed, he was easily that guy for the Atlanta Falcons. And when we're talking about him in free agency, I mean, hey, Arthur Smith is taking an interview with the Titans and the Cardinals as the head coach. Hey, maybe he can go, Tennessee Titans, Arthur Smith, they reunite. Wouldn't everybody absolutely love that? So there's a little bit of disgustingness to take into our first break here. And when we come back on the other side, we'll talk about some wide receiver selections that we got right this past year. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back. Let's get into some fun stuff. Let's get into the wide receivers that we got right here. This next one we're going to listen to, some big flag plants that became home run picks in your fantasy drafts. Let's take a listen. Last point just on JSN. He's another guy that I feel like we just didn't talk enough about in fantasy circles. He's like a third year ascending guy. That's usually one of those players that everybody universally would be like, yay, draft that dude. Of course, people kind of galaxy brained, like the pass rates are coming down and the pass rates are going to come down. But when's the last time a young ascending potential superstar receiver got crushed by, oh, the pass rate change? If Sam Darnold's good and this offense is still efficient, he should be more than fine as like a third round pick this year. I did a bold prediction show and one of them was JSN finishes top five in receiving yards this year. And again, he's somebody that is like not counted as like that type of upside. And look, it's bold prediction. Nobody cares if you get that right. I'm getting really high on George Pickens this season, man. There were some times last year where he was so, so good. There was the usual George Pickens BS, but man, if he's dialed in, he's locked in. I feel like he could have a T. Higgins type season, you know, where he is the number two receiver on an offense that's throwing the ball all over the yard. And he just wins a lot of those like X receiver plays, and he could score double digit touchdowns this year. A couple top five wide receivers we're talking about from this past year. Jackson Smith and Jigba, wide receiver two. George Pickens, wide receiver five. You throw those two guys out there, Boone. And that was, especially Pickens was a player we were both high on as well. That was kind of a universal show player that we really liked here.
Yeah, for sure. The Pickens one. Yeah. And I want to give you your flowers on JSN, man. That bold prediction there, that was a great one. Nailed that completely. The Pickens one, we were both in on him. I wrote an article early on when I got to Yahoo talking about him and his potential in that offense. I think he was around six pick. I think his ADP was around like wide receiver 30 or so.
30, 31,
yeah,
something
wide
like
receiver
that.
Six in fantasy points per game. Stats are on the screen there. 93 catches, over 1,400 yards, 9 touchdowns. Helps that CeeDee Lamb missed a little bit of time in there, and he had some monster games during that stretch, but he even balled out when Lamb was active too. And yeah, we were pushing him as one of the top guys to get in that, you know, round 5 to 7 range. And he came through even bigger than I had envisioned. And I'll say the same about JSN. Like, I also like JSN a little ahead of consensus, not much. Like, he was wide receiver 14 in ADP. I had him as wide receiver 12, but I didn't see anything like this. I wasn't throwing out a bold prediction like you were on him potentially being that high. And I think for me, the lesson learned is, like, you know, I was too down on Sam Darnold. I really thought Sam Darnold would struggle there. I don't think I gave Clint Kubiak enough credit before the season for what he could do for that passing attack. And I certainly didn't give Darnold enough credit for the development that he had last year and that he would be able to thrive away from Kevin O'Connell and that environment that he had in Minnesota. I just didn't think that Seahawks passing attack would be able to support JSN in the way that it did. On top of the fact that they have like zero competition for him in terms of targets, right? So it's the perfect kind of environment for fantasy where you have this guy who's breaking out, who's getting a ton of volume, who they need to be the focal point of their offense. And he absolutely came through. Wide receiver 2 overall on the season was about a point behind Puka Nacua, but 18 fantasy points per game and half PPR from JSN. And you got him in like the 5th or 6th round, I think, in a lot of drafts. Like, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, at best, he was like a third round pick in really competitive leagues because, and these two actually both prove very different but important lessons about the wide receiver position overall. With JSN, it's funny, like, I think on that clip, I talked about a bold prediction show I did with Reception Perception in August, where I said that he was going to finish top five in the NFL in receiving yards. I did a bold prediction show back at the Super Bowl last year with Football 301, where I said he was going to lead the league in receiving yards. So I gave myself two avenues there. One, I think February, I was lead the league in receiving yards. August, top five. I should have just stuck with the highest end outcome there. Shouldn't have backed down to top five. Come on, what an idiot. But no, I think the clip with the JSN one also was like, bar for bar exactly how it happened is that I think people overthought, well, Clint Kubiak's going to come in here and establish the run, and that's going to take some of the passing volume away from JSN that we saw last year when Ryan Grubb in that, you know, stupid bozo college offense was just like really spreading it out and throwing the ball a lot with Geno Smith. Well, who cares when you've got one guy who's going to inhale all of the volume in a really efficient, well-designed pro offense? That matters so much more than the overall bottom line pass rates, which I do think fantasy players and fantasy analysts overthink sometimes. They're like, oh, there's going to be a lot of passing volume here. And sometimes you get that, like Michael Wilson led the NFL in routes run this year because they were just dropping back and dropping back and dropping back. And he obviously had a 1,000-yard season, was one of the waiver wire guys of the year. But if you can get an efficient offense and you get a guy who's going to dominate targets in that offense, you get this unanimous all-pro first-team season here from JSN, which he totally deserves. And then for George Pickens, again, I think this is less of a fantasy analyst thing and more anytime you hype up one of these players that's the number two wide receiver on his team, it's like people don't want to draft that guy. But I almost think, Boone, because wide receiver twos right now are so flat, like the scoring has been down at that position lately in the last two seasons. When you can get one of these guys that's a wide receiver two on his team, but they are going to throw the football a lot, and they have a well-designed offense, and they have a good quarterback, and that guy's a baller, like that's way more important than a number one receiver on a lesser team.
Yeah, the only thing I'm sad about when it comes to Pickens is, and you're going to hate me for this, you know, it's playing dynasty like it is a stock market, but when he was still in Pittsburgh after the NFL draft last year, I thought he might get traded before the draft. He didn't. And after the draft, I was like, okay, if he didn't get traded before the draft, he's probably going to be stuck in Pittsburgh another year here. He's unhappy. I better like hedge my bets a little bit here. I traded away about half of the shares I had of Pickens in Dynasty.
Oh,
I kept
no.
some, got rid of a few. And yeah, then he gets traded to Dallas. The whole game changes and a lot of regrets there. So that's one of those ones where when you're playing it like a stock market, you're trying to play it safe, maybe.
See?
I end up looking quite foolish. Yeah.
You diversified your portfolio, brother. You can't be do that with your index funds. Don't be doing that with your dynasty teams. But no, I was surprised he wasn't traded at the draft. And when it was funny, because I was in LA at the time for the draft. And I think this was the night that I went out with some of my wife's family that still lives in LA. So I remember being in the back of an Uber. Totally not sober. But there was a tweet, I think, from Diana Russini. It was like, oh, this is George Pickens still on the trade market. And I remember firing off like, George Pickens, he's a Raider or a Cowboy in the back of a freaking Uber. And he turned out to be a Cowboy. And so you should have, we weren't working together at the time. So that's my fault, Boone. I should have helped you out there. That's on me. All right, let's get to a couple other players here. Some old wide receivers who ended up actually being some pretty good bets this year. Well, in one way. Typically, you don't want to be betting on guys in their 30s coming off an ACL tear, changing teams. But if you're going to bet on somebody to beat the odds, why not Stephon Diggs? Because he's already an odds beater. This is a guy that was a former fifth round pick that has grown into at one point being an elite wide receiver in this league. And the reason that he has done that is because maniacal work ethic, true technician at the position. And like, we want to find ways to get into this Patriots offense with Drake May likely breaking out in his second season. God, he's like the guy I want to take the least in this range. Because
But talk about it. Why not? Talk about it. Talk about it, Matt. Talk about it.
So Tyreek Hill definitely started the decline last year on an individual standpoint. Now, I know there was the wrist stuff. Immediately, you get the response, well, hey, maybe he just wasn't all the way locked in. I don't love that as an excuse ever for any player, by the way. Like, who's to say he's fully locked in this year? You know, he's kind of beefing with the quarterback. He's talking about who should be in at the goal line. Mike McDaniel puts Jalen Wright in at the goal line in the damn preseason game.
Right.
Immediately stuffed. He's like, see, Tyreek, I know what I'm talking about here. Anyway, don't love that part of it. That's like sort of the more intangible thing. But I also just, one thing I am confident in saying, usually once a guy starts to decline, he's in his 30s like that, the next thing isn't right back up to the elite form. You know what I'm saying? Okay, so the first clip was about Stephon Diggs. The second clip was about Tyreek Hill, who you and I were both in lockstep. There's a lot of these where I'm doing the yapping, but we were both kind of in lockstep. Like, yeah, George Pickens, like we mentioned, you were 100% with me on that one. You were also, I think the whole show, Scott Pienowski included, very skeptical of Tyreek Hill. Do we give ourselves credit for that one? Because, I mean, he got hurt in week 4. I don't know if we can, I don't know if we know how that one would have played out.
Here's what I will say. Yeah, I'm not going to give myself credit because of the injury, but I will say, I don't think he necessarily looked like the same player. Like I think everything you said in that clip, like the idea of like, oh, he's going to, you know, have a bounce back this season. No, it looked like more of the same from the year before. And he looked like a player who was kind of losing a step, perhaps not quite the same guy, not quite as explosive, not getting the same kind of volume. You know, he was a top 20 wide receiver in two of the first 5 weeks there before he got hurt. In terms of averages, he was the wide receiver 19 in fantasy points per game on the year when it was all said and done. Of course, a small sample size from him because the injury. That's exactly where I had him ranked. And that was behind the ADP, which was, I think, wide receiver 12. It was just, we kind of knew exactly what you said in that clip, which was, there's no going back. There's no, you draft him at wide receiver 12 and he gives you that top five season. I saw it more as you draft him as a wide receiver 2. And he ends up giving you wide receiver 2 production. And if you kind of adjust your expectations and you could get him, you know, if he fell in drafts, fine. But where he was going, you wanted to stay away. And I think if he had stayed healthy, he would have been okay. He would have been probably, you know, top 20, top 24 receiver, would have had some good games, kind of boom or bust, just not what we've seen from the past in him. So I don't know. We're wishing him the best. I hope we see him on a football field again. But man, that was a pretty brutal injury, and we don't really know if or when we're going to see him again on a football field.
Yeah, I definitely think that is without question the case. And, you know, by the way, it's funny, I was listening to that and I kind of thought this will be a lot of the same stuff that people say about AJ Brown in 2026, where, oh, was he all the way locked in last year? You know, and it's like, I don't know. And I still think AJ Brown can be a good player. I still think Tyreek Hill, had he not gotten hurt, it would have been a good player last year. But like I said, typically what we don't see is decline from the elite player. They get back to elite form, you know, like, I think that's just not what we necessarily see. So we'll see about that in the offseason.
Yeah, I think I want to give you props too on the Stephon Diggs one, because you really hit that. But I thought like the first couple lines of that clip is where you really hit it. And I think what people should focus on moving forward, which is just, you don't bet on a receiver who's
don't bet on again. Yeah.
Coming
yeah.
off an ACL tear. That's the takeaway. Like, that's what you should be doing. This was a total outlier. You do not see guys do this very often. I will continue to avoid guys who are in that exact same situation. Diggs just totally came through. He overcame it all, and he had a fantastic year, you know, to go over 1,000 yards coming off the ACL. And the way, I think it was really smart of the team, how they kind of ramped him up. Like, it wasn't like they threw him out there right away and expected him to be a full-time player. They kind of eased him into it, and then he performed and had some really big games for them. So, yeah, I think it's awesome that you nailed that one, and I hope you won some fantasy leagues because of it. But I want to tell people, like, don't take that as like the new norm and you're going to be drafting wide receivers who are over 30 coming off serious injuries. That is a scary thing to do.
100%. I couldn't agree with you more. It's the whole point of that prediction was Stephon Diggs is different. If you're going to do it on somebody, do it on Diggs. Don't be doing that on a consistent basis going forward. Let's get to the next one here. Some sneaky good takes here that mattered. Let's take a listen.
You get one really solid receiver early, you get a couple running backs early, and then you backfill that receiver in this range. You find those upside guys. And for me, I took Chris Olave. Like, I think the only thing really holding him back, because I also share your optimism potentially about that Saints offense. I know the quarterback situation, kind of an unknown, but I still feel like that offense could be better than people realize. And Olave, it's just the health. It's just the concussion thing that I think people are so scared of. I'm pretty sure you could make a case, like, production wise for him. The guy's a guy that could put up 80 yards any given week. He probably, if he was fully healthy, should be up in the top 20.
Rashawn Slater being out, he is one of the best left tackles in the NFL. Okay. Part of my optimism for this offense is that offensive line was going to be better. They have some ability to survive this, but I do think you have to dock them some points as an offensive line overall. Fantasy community never reacts properly to offensive line injuries. I don't want to just yada yada this. The fact that Keenan Allen is like wide receiver 5 in PPR points, Quentin Johnson 7, Ladd McConkey's 40. I will eat this pen if that's the case by the end of the season. Okay. Like, that's not going to happen. Uh-oh. That will normalize itself. No, I mean, listen, I'm telling you, Ladd McConkey, wide receiver 40, I'll eat this freaking pen and you know, probably die because of it. It is what it is. But
producer Colin, like, clip that. We're gonna need that at the end of the season potentially.
I should probably not be manifesting these things after we just had that Ashton exactly. Trent Richardson thing. Oh my God, what am I doing here? What am I doing here is a really good question. First of all, before we get to the Chris Olave call by you, which is really good. Yeah, Ladd McConkey was not wide receiver 41. Wide receiver 29. Okay. Quentin Johnson, wide receiver 31.
Wait a minute. I think it's even closer than that. And we probably weren't going to go by averages, but we always tell everyone you should be going by average fantasy points per game, not totals for the season.
Totals matter. Okay.
Look at the averages, man, I didn't look at it for a long time. I thought we were in the clear. I wasn't thinking about it. I wasn't worried about it. I went and looked it up today. McConkey ended up as the wide receiver 37 in fantasy points per game and half PPR. He averaged 9.2 fantasy points per game. Quentin Johnston, the wide receiver 24 in fantasy points per game, averaged 10.4 fantasy points per game. So you were in more danger if we went that way than even realized. But of course, you are safe. There's no pens that need to be eaten here. And McConkey just... such a weird season. And yeah, we can blame the offensive line issues for sure. Just that offense kind of failing to look like itself. And, you know, we saw in the playoffs, like not even being able to move the ball or score points against the Patriots. But McConkey under 50 yards in every single game from week 11 on. Imagine I had told you that before the season. Like you would have assumed that he had some terrible injury. He was, you know, playing with a broken leg or something out there, and yet not the case. Just Keenan Allen being out there, a little more target competition, and the struggles of the offensive line kind of sewered everything.
Yeah. Offensive line, just the Greg Roman of it all. I'd be betting on Ladd McConkey and this Chargers offense to bounce back next year pretty heavily. Your call on Chris Olave was great. That was an optimism one that we shared as well. When you can get a talented player like that who is going late for environmental reasons, when you can get him late for, you know, medical concerns because people think they're great at predicting injuries, they're bad at predicting injuries, just hammer that sucker every single time. Because, man, Chris Olave is such a good player and was one of the best value picks you obviously could have made this year.
And I think it really helped, and I want to give them their props, that the Saints played so hard. They weren't really a winning team. Man, they were out there competing week in and week out, and I think that helped Olave be able to put up some good fantasy points. The targets we saw right from the get-go, and that continued all year long, sixth in targets. But the fact that that team kind of kept pushing and played some closer games, never really gave up as the season went along, I think that also helped him come through there. But yeah, I thought that was one of like the easier calls this summer, that he was certainly a talented player and you were just getting a massive injury discount because of the concussion history. And fortunately, he made it through the season and had a great year.
And I think it's very similar to the JSN one, where people were not giving enough credit to what a huge seismic shift that was going to be, going from a poorly constructed offense. Clint Kubiak obviously was the offensive coordinator for Chris Olave in his third season, but he was banged up so much in that I almost don't really count that. His first 2 years, atrociously designed offenses, huge difference going to Kellen Moore this past year. And then same thing, obviously, with JSN when Clint Kubiak replaced Ryan Grubb there. So that makes a huge significant difference there for Chris Olave.
I mean, it also helps that he was catching passes from Matt Harmon's favorite player, Tyler Shuck, right?
Tyler Shuck changed
the game for him.
Yeah, I was waiting for you to remember. I mean, the quarterback situation ambiguous, not ambiguous anymore, baby. Fighting Tyler Shuck. No. That's what's happening down there in that NFC South. All right, our last one to discuss here. Simple, not here. We don't have a clip because if we played the clips that we had of this guy, it would have literally taken up the whole damn show. Got to give a nod to Tucker Kraft, who I feel like we talked about every single day in August. Scott, we loved Tucker Kraft. He was like the flag plant player of the podcast, and unfortunately he did get hurt, but he was the tight end 2 in points per game before his injury. Man, I miss Tucker Kraft. I still miss him. I think the Packers really missed him in that playoff loss too, so we are wishing him a speedy recovery so he can get back to dominating as a blocker, as a receiver, as a total freak show in the year 2026.
Yeah, absolutely. And unless we hear something bad about the injury recovery, we'll be in on him again next year. At least I will. And I think we were looking at PPR there, because if you look in the first 8 weeks of the season before the injury happened in half PPR, he was the number one scoring tight end. And remember, that was before like that was before McBride really got going, and you know, yeah, Jacoby Brissett and that the whole story kind of changed things for McBride. But before that, man, it was looking great, and it looked like Tucker Kraft was going to have one of those difference-making seasons, and I think it's just a reason to stay in on him, right? The last 2 years, he's led tight ends in yak, yards after catch, so let's keep that going. You know, average yards after catch, I should say, of course, because of the injury, but regardless, we know that's a huge part of his game, on top of the fact that the Packers told us before the year they were going to push. They were going to get the ball to him as much as they could, and that's exactly what was happening before he got hurt. So let's hope it's a nice, clean recovery, and we get him back next season producing on a field.
100%. And the lesson, of course, there is, as we said earlier with Kyle Pitts, look for those tight ends in ambiguous target rooms who could potentially lead their team in targets. And that was who Tucker Kraft was. It was a great reason to be in on him. In addition to the fact, you also got to be a total badass of a player, which of course Tucker Kraft is. All right, we are going to take our final break. When we come back, we're going to get into some dynasty debates that you guys submitted for us. We'll get into that right after this. All right, we're back, and it is time for the segment that is actually potentially really truly sweeping the nation here. It is our Dynasty Debates. Let's get into it. All right, like I mentioned last week, you guys absolutely crushed it from a mailbag perspective. Fantasymailbag at yahoosports.com. Send in your dynasty debates there. We will talk about the best ones here on the show. We still have a ton to get into, but we'd love to hear more from you guys. So again, fantasymailbag at yahoosports.com. It can be, you know, player-specific, players versus players. We'll get into a ton here. Let's get to the first one on Zay Flowers. Miles sends this in. Please help me out. Zay Flowers has to be the most frustrating wide receiver for me to roster in Dynasty. Week to week, his production is unpredictable. He's an undersized vertical weapon in offense with low overall pass volume, which caps his target ceiling. Also struggles to score touchdowns, largely because Lamar Jackson prefers throwing to his tight ends in the red zone. As a result, it's hard to ever feel confident starting him. And yet, despite all that, Flowers finished as the wide receiver 7. He began the season as an analytics darling. His RP profile confirms the talent is real. He consistently wins on his routes and separates at a high level. So the question becomes, how should dynasty managers actually value him? Is Zay Flowers a replaceable asset whose value should be cashed out for an upside rookie pick while the market is still somewhat high? Or is this a situation where you accept production, trust the underlying talent, and hope for a usage shift or a true JSN level breakout at some point? Curious where you land on him long term after this season and with an upcoming coaching change. Yeah, that coaching change will be interesting to consider here, Boone, but what's your overall thoughts on Zay Flowers and some of what Miles had to say?
Well, I don't see him having a JSN type ceiling, but I think we could go back to the Rashad Bateman conversation a bit, where we talked about the Ravens offense as a whole. Just they weren't themselves this year, right? It didn't hit anywhere near what they had done in recent years. So I think we can give them a bit of a break for what happened this season, but still the fact that Flowers finally started to find the end zone, that was huge, right? That was the thing kind of missing for him. So to score a couple more touchdowns, to end up putting up a year like this in a season where the offense had its struggles, I think that's really good. Now, if you can get like top 10, top 12 value in exchange for him in a trade, I would do that. I don't think he's going to end up being like a wide receiver one, you know, long-term. I think he's more of a wide receiver two, a guy that you feel good about having in your lineup, a guy who's going to have some spiked weeks. But no, I don't think he has like that elite ceiling in him. Do you see it differently?
No, I think we pretty much see it the same. I don't know what the fake news market has to say about him, but I've got him as like wide receiver 26 in my dynasty rankings, because I agree with you. Like, I think you can, if that's what you want, you can just sit on that production. He probably gives you, you know, what he's given you the last few years consistently. But I also think he's the type of player, because I try to do this more on like a talent basis, what I think about players, because situations change so quickly on a year to year basis, even, you know, especially over the course of like 3 to 4 years. It's hard to project project going forward. And I just don't think that Flowers is the type of guy that is a true number one receiver in the NFL. I think he's really, really good, but I see him more ideally as a two, you know, similar to, like, I think Devontae Smith is a better player. I think George Pickens, I think T. Higgins, those type are better. Jaylen Waddle, I think, is kind of maybe comparable player to Zay Flowers, but I think a number, like, coming back to the Bateman thing, I think the Ravens actually would be better to think about, like, adding a number one wide receiver to this mix and maybe slot everybody back down into more comfortable roles. So no, I think we can move on from this one because we generally see this one the same. Let's get to this next one. Comes in from Harry Evans. Hey guys, happy new year. Oh man, January 14th, new year. In fairness to Harry, he sent this in a long time ago, I believe. So it's fine to be still saying happy new year when you sent this in. I would not be wishing anybody a happy new year on January 14th. Anyways, back to the question. Hey guys, happy new year. Whenever Caleb Johnson comes up on a podcast, people laugh and make jokes. They call him dead, then they move on. But he was also a highly touted, highly productive college player, expected to do a lot. Maybe he just sucks. But on the other hand, we have old man Rodgers, known for demanding his chosen players and then a rookie. Maybe he struggled pass blocking, got shut down. The Steelers invested in this guy and he has talent. Am I crazy to think he could surprise everyone and become a thing next year? Thanks. I know, Harry is so right. Whenever we bring up Caleb Johnson, it's like, oh my God, remember Caleb Johnson? But it's probably worth, like, investigating and thinking about, even though he had this horrendous rookie season, as we're showing here on the screen, is there anything more to Caleb Johnson, or are you pretty happy just completely, like, moving him out of your mind here?
I don't know about this one. Like, when a running back face plants as bad as he did this year, oh, it's time to worry normally. Like, in Dynasty, that's not often a situation that you want to involve yourself in. You normally see a little bit of something, especially in a backfield where there should have been opportunity this year. And even when there were injuries, they really didn't boost his workload at all, right? It was just like, all right, Kenny Gainwell gets everything now. That's not a great sign. Now, there's going to be a coaching change. That doesn't necessarily mean it's a good thing either, because a new coaching staff's not going to have any ties to him necessarily. So it's just a crapshoot at that point, and it's not really a spot where I want to invest in for Dynasty. So I don't feel good about it. I would look at him just like a lottery ticket pick. And if you spent a late first, you know, early second to get him, which is where he was going in rookie drafts last year, you're probably going to hold, because you are not going to get anything back in a trade for him right now. So it's a tough situation. And one where I'm not going to take pennies in return for him, but I don't have a lot of faith that he is going to come through and have a big fantasy future.
Yeah, I think you speculatively hold him through the offseason. But yeah, you're right that Harry, that Rodgers, obviously known for demanding, you know, he clearly, his favorite players, Kenny Gainwell was his favorite player this year. But you made a great point there, Boone. The coaching change, one of the reasons to be optimistic about Caleb Johnson when he got drafted by the Steelers in the third round was he got drafted to Arthur Smith's, like, very heavy zone scheme, which fit him very well. Arthur Smith is not going to be the offensive coordinator for the 2026 Pittsburgh Steelers. So that is yet another kind of anti check mark in his future outlook here. So definitely concerning. Maybe we don't need to make jokes and laugh. Keep, like, again, speculatively holding through the offseason, but I'm with Boone that I think the odds he becomes a fantasy factor are pretty low. Anything else on this one, or should we move on?
I was just going to say he's a third round pick too, right? Like, in real life, it's not like he was a first round pick or something. It's not like he had incredible draft capital. Third round's good, but it's not like they can't just move on from him if they wanted to. And I think that's what we're going to see happen. They're going to have to bring somebody else in there probably. I think the odds of him coming through for fantasy are pretty slim.
All right, let's get to this next one. This one's actually from social media submitted. This next one here comes in from, we're going to call it Chuck. This one here. Given the flattened wide receiver two, wide receiver three production and the increased emphasis on run game, should I start trading off my wide receiver two, wide receiver three big names for running back starter depth? In other words, will roster build skew RB heavy now? I think this is a good question. I kind of hinted at this earlier in the in one of the questions, or one of the things we talked about, that the wide receiver two, wide receiver three scoring on a per game basis has been down the last few years. I was tweeting about this with Ryan Heath earlier. People can think last week. People can find that on my Twitter feed. Yapped about it a little bit there. Yapped about it on an episode of Reception Perception too, like some of my overall theories on it. But let's just note that that is a thing that has happened these last 2 years. the kind of consensus idea about dynasty roster building, Boone, I don't know how you feel about this, but you want to build around wide receivers because they're more stable, you know, year to year. You know, that's kind of was even friggin' 10 years ago doing dynasty content. That's sort of the mainstream thought. Do you think we need to shift our focus on that, or are you going to continue, or do you build your dynasty teams around wide receivers over running backs?
I don't think that people should really change what they're doing. I think this will come back around. And I agree that, like, I do think that you should be building around strong young wide receivers, but also we're trying to find like those elite profiles, right? I know that seems obvious to say, but for me, the idea is like, spend your early startup picks trying to get these younger, talented wideouts who can be like the core of your team for a long time. And it's not just because they could have these longer careers than running backs. It's also because I want to have a lot of bench spots to spend on running back, right? So I want to get younger elite receivers and not roster that many receivers. I want to roster as few receivers as possible, to be honest. And you're going to hate to hear that, of course, but I want to do that because I think it's harder, you know, deeper in drafts. I think, and maybe not for you, but I think for most people, it's harder to find these like really deep receivers that are going to emerge and become like stars on your team, right? They might emerge and become guys that you could put in your flex or something like that. But it's hard to really dig up those guys that are going to become top 10, top 20 guys and get them late in rookie drafts or late in your startup. So the goal for me, it's more about roster build, taking elite receivers, trying to get them young, kind of doing the same with quarterback. And then my whole goal after that is you can trade for running backs. When the rest of your roster looks pretty good, that's when I go make a move to get even a veteran running back potentially, because we know veterans you can get cheaper in Dynasty. Fill it backfill at running back like that. That's what I want to do. I think it's really important because most of the leagues I play in are super flex. I will also say most of the Dynasty leagues I play in are PPR. So that's why I'm looking at receivers and I'm looking at quarterbacks as the core of my team. Tight ends, if you can find one along the way, great. If not, you can work the waiver wire. Unless you're in like a really deep league, 14 teams. I talk about being in some of those, right? Like 34-man rosters. Sure, there's nothing on the waiver wire in those. But in like regular analyst dynasty leagues, 12 teams, you know, 20-something spots on your roster, I've picked up guys like George Kittle in his rookie year, was either dropped or not drafted. And it's because George Kittle, now we remember him being this star player. But when he was coming out, he was no sure thing. Guys like Jake Ferguson, guys like Juwan Johnson, you can find guys on the waiver wire that it doesn't seem like it because now we look at them, we go, those guys are starters, they're productive. But at times they have been available even in analyst dynasty leagues for me. So I'm trying to like dig and find tight ends that way. And then for running back, I'm just trying to get as many as I can on my roster and hope that I hit on a few, but also have all those bench spots available to put those guys that one injury, two injuries, and all of a sudden they can be those spot starters for a few weeks or maybe for the rest of the season if the starter on their team goes out completely. So that's kind of how I view it. I hope that answers the question that I think over the long term, to me, it seems like it's going to come back around. I don't think you should completely, you know, shift to just being running back heavy in terms of the top of your roster. I don't know if you feel differently, though, especially being a guy who's very pro wide receiver.
No, I think that's a great breakdown. And part of the thing that I was going to say was I think that wide receiver 2-3 bucket is so crowded that you could potentially look at guys, you know, like Jordan Addison is in the news for, you know, another legal issue that he has right now. But he's a great example of a guy that is just like will never be that superstar player. He'll just always kind of at best be a wide receiver too. So if you can, again, maybe tough right now, just the example that came to my head, but you could trade him for like a usable running back piece. I'm totally willing to cycle those pieces out. The guys who don't have access to be that next superstar necessarily for both talent and opportunity reasons. I think that's a great thing to point out. And then you mentioned in the rookie draft, and I actually struggle with this, Boone, because I like wide receivers and feel like I do know the position so well that, you know, I'm always trying to get some of the guys that I really like. And this is a good example of a player this past year from my rookie draft. You know, Jack Besh is a guy I took in the second round. I think maybe Besh ends up being fine, but is he going to end up being a fantasy difference maker? I don't know about that, when I probably should have just taken like a Cam Scataboo type in the second round, because yeah, there are odds where, oh, Scataboo is a fourth round running back, and obviously he ended up being really good before he got hurt, but that wasn't a guarantee necessarily. Easy to say that in hindsight, but the odds that Scataboo is going to help my fantasy team are a lot higher than Jack Besh on the damn Raiders, you know, with even if he ends up being a good player, which we don't know, but that's like kind of a practical example of it there.
Not that it's like this every single season, but if you go back and look at rookie drafts, and this has sort of shifted in my approach to Dynasty over the years, but if you go back and look at rookie drafts, starting with this year, right, where were you better off spending those second, third, fourth, depending how many rounds your rookie draft goes, picks? You were better off spending them on running backs, like you just mentioned, yeah, a guy like shots. Cam Scataboo. Even like, think about like Devin Neal gave you some value, right? Like all those guys we talked about before the season, JCM. When I rattled off like 27 or 28 names of these guys that could have fantasy value, a lot of them ended up doing it. The tight end class, we knew it was very strong. I got Harold Fannin Jr. in the third round in some rookie drafts. There's still guys like, you know, Terrence Ferguson and stuff that you could have gotten in the third round, and you could be looking at him as a potential piece for you down the road, or quarterbacks like Tyler Shuck to bring him up again, right? You take the shots on those guys, especially in like a super flex format, because if they do end up hitting, and we knew Shuck might have an opportunity at some point this year to start, if they do end up hitting, they're giving you value where you could rattle off a lot of names, including ones that I was touting, like Jalen Royals on the Chiefs, right? Who you were looking at him as like a third or fourth round rookie dynasty pick, and nothing comes of it. And we could cherry pick like that all day long. But I promise, if you go back and look at rookie drafts over the years recently, you were much better off chasing those running backs, chasing tight ends, even chasing quarterbacks, which also gets kind of tricky, but chasing quarterbacks that have a path to opportunity, like a guy like Tyler Shuck, versus some of those deeper receivers where, yes, every once in a while you get a Puka Nacua, but it is very rare and it's tough to find those guys that become week in, week out starters for you. I would much rather have a very strong starting group of receivers and then just, you know, one or two guys on the bench, or try to chase the waiver wire. Or remember, you can always trade, right? If you end up with an injury to your starting lineup, you can go out and try to trade for a piece that could fill in, as opposed to carrying all these deeper receivers that you're hanging on to. And I've been there too, Harmon. We've all done it. We've all held on to these guys. You know, Adonai Mitchell is someone that's been on my bench for a long time. I finally got to start him in Dynasty a few times this year, to mixed results, of course. But yeah, you hang on to these guys that you really believe in, and it's almost like burning a roster spot when you have them for a few years, when you could have just been cycling through some of these deeper running backs or some of these guys at other positions that might have a better shot of producing and being a meaningful piece in your starting lineup at some point.
Yeah, I'm glad we talked about that, because that's something that I, like I said, I struggle with as a dynasty player. So it's a good reminder. Next one we'll get into, we mentioned those superstar receivers. Tim Mansfield has a simple debate for us on this one. Hey, Matt, love the content. My submission for the debate is Puka Nacua versus JSN. Love a simple email there, Tim. We love that. Okay, so I'm assuming, Boone, these guys for you would be in contention to be wide receiver one overall in Dynasty: Jaxon Smith-Njigba, Puka Nacua. Which one would you rather have and why?
So Tim is not going to like this answer. I put out my updated Dynasty trade value charts on Monday. And they are tied in terms of their value. I have them both at the exact same value. So I kind of hedged my bet there a little bit. If I had to pick between them, it would be Puka. I mean, he led all wideouts in fantasy scoring this year. Like I said earlier, it was over a point ahead of second place, which was JSN. And then there was a big gap, about 2.5 points to third place. So these guys have kind of put themselves up, you know, above everyone else. I think Jamar Chase is the other guy that could be put into that conversation. But they're both great. I don't spend a lot of time like debating stuff like this. I just don't think there's a point to it. I think both these guys are awesome. If you had to pick between them, gun to my head, I'm going to go with Puka Nacua. I understand that, you know, the Stafford situation could be scary. What happens after the season? Does Stafford retire? You know, he's an older quarterback. Does there start to be some decline at some point with him? That's a little worrisome. But the fact that Puka went out there, he's shown now he is the focal point of that Sean McVay passing attack. That a guy like Devontae Adams shows up, puts up 14 touchdowns, and Puka still puts up a season like he put up this year, that's a great sign. I think McVay is going to find another quarterback. You know, even if Stafford leaves eventually, when that happens, they're going to have another quarterback there. Puka's fantastic. And maybe this is me having a little bit of concern still in the back of my mind about a Sam Darnold and whether he's going to be like a great quarterback to be tied to for the long term here. But I don't know. For me, it's Puka, but it's Puka by a hair because, like I said, I kind of value them the exact same.
Same tier to me. Feel very similar about these two guys. But yeah, I love that you brought this point up. A producer Colin on the outline wrote in as you were talking counterpoint, you know, who's going to be the Rams quarterback in 2 years. Counterpoint to the counterpoint, who's going to be the Seahawks quarterback in 2 years? How confident are you that it's going to be Sam Darnold? Like that's the thing that we think about these things in. Like, did you think 2 years ago that Sam Darnold was going to be the quarterback of the Seahawks?
No.
You thought it would just be Geno Smith, you know, I guess forever. Like, things change really quickly in the NFL. And I promise you, Puka Nacua, I know we've only seen him with Matthew Stafford, so maybe he won't be, you know, going nuclear, most efficient wide receiver in the NFL with another quarterback. But his role is very quarterback-proof. Like, he has the ability to produce with a different quarterback. I'm very, very confident. I can promise you that. And again, if we're breaking ties here, forget the quarterback part of it. Puka Nacua, as long as he gets off, you know, internet streams, he'll be tied to Sean McVay forever. McVay will be there forever until he wants to do, you know, the Mike Tomlin and peace out to TV, you know, like Clint Kubiak, he's going to be gone. If not this coaching cycle, the next coaching cycle, like he won't always be there. They'll have to shift through that. So that's part of the tiebreaker to me. Again, same tier, but I would give the edge to Puka Nacua as well. Last question here we'll take for the dynasty debates. And remember, fantasy mailbag at yahoosports.com. If you want to get your dynasty debate on the show, this one comes in from Michael. Hey Harmon, big fan. Have we gotten in? Have really gotten into your content the last couple of seasons? What's the deal with Breece Hall? When he came into the scene, he seemed like the real deal before tearing his knee. Then comes back and is the RB2 in full PPR, coming back from an ACL tear. 2024 felt like maybe there was an injury or something we weren't privy to that was driving down his production. 2025. Had some moments, but also felt like more of the same. It seems like the perception of him, which is obviously important in terms of dynasty value, is down. Are Breece managers hosed if he somehow stays on the Jets in 2026? Can he be unlocked in a better ecosystem? See, told you was a big fan of the show. And becomes the next running back in line to be freed by a change of scenery. Thanks, Matt. Appreciate the constant flow of content you provide while I'm paying my fat taxes on the treadmill. Hey, Michael, I every morning, now that it's too cold, outside for me to walk in the morning, my wife won't let me. I'm paying my fat taxes on the treadmill, too. And I'm if you're using Harmon content while you're on the treadmill, number one, you're a braver soldier than me. I got to watch a show. I can't be listening. The thought of listening to myself on the treadmill is horrendous. Okay. I need some visual. I listen to my books outside. But listening to my podcast, there is a lot of them. So you got plenty of time on that treadmill, but that's a lot to deal with here. Boone, I don't know about that. If you want to comment on treadmill fat taxes or if whatever the hell I just said, or if you just like to talk about Breece Hall, that's probably what people want to hear about.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about Breece Hall here. I'm not going to go anywhere near that one. I had a really hard time when I was doing the Dynasty Trade Value Chart update this week, really figuring out how I wanted to value him. And it's funny because before the season in the summer, I wrote an article about the players that were giving me the hardest time for ranking them in 2025. And Breece Hall was one of the players I talked about in that column as well. And I think it's just because the situation in New York, right? It's been rough. I think he is a talented player. He overcame the injury. He managed to come back. He still put up top 10 numbers, like on a per game basis over a good stretch. But he's really kind of struggled to get back there in the last couple seasons. And I think it's because the offense itself has struggled. It's hard for him to put up big stats with the way that offense is gone. And now you look at him being a free agent, him, I think, wanting to get out of there. Will they let him go? Will they try to find a way? I mean, teams normally hold the cards, right? In terms of being able to franchise guys and keep guys in-house. But hopefully this is kind of heading towards a divorce. Hopefully they let him leave. But then it even makes you wonder, like, who out there is excited to get him? Because based on what we heard around the deadline, people weren't really ponying up to get him, right? No one was offering that third round pick. The rumors were that the Chiefs offered a fourth and no one was going higher than that. So which team out there is that excited to bring him in and make him the guy? I still believe, though, Harmon, that he does have that kind of potential where if he goes to the right spot, not necessarily like the Saquon Barkley going to the Eagles, but that kind of idea where if you put him in a really good offense, you know, he could really emerge and flourish and be great for fantasy again. But there's a lot of ifs there. There's a lot of buts. There's a lot of question marks and caveats. And so I ended up kind of ranking him around RB 18. You look at him as like that RB 2, who I still do think has RB 1 potential, but there's just a lot of risk involved if you're going out and trying to pick him up in Dynasty. But if I have him on my team, I'm holding through this offseason to see where he ends up, because his value could really skyrocket if he goes to the right place.
And I think for that reason, I wouldn't mind, you know, sniffing around a trade offer for him as well. Now, there is no question the Jets could just franchise tag Breece Hall and say, hey, suck it up, pal. Like, you're coming to work for us this year. And that's that. But if he goes elsewhere, and I mean, God, the Chiefs, a third round pick. Oh, was that really going to break your heart to give up a third round pick versus a fourth round pick? Your drafts aren't that good anyways. Come on, Brett Veach, give up that third round pick, baby. But yeah, I mean, if he's the Chiefs running back, you know, in a couple of months from now, his dynasty value is going to be doing one of these, baby. It's going to be going up. Okay. Like, the fake news market will be crazy for Breece Hall. But yeah, man, I really do like him as a potential addition. And I think most of it is ecosystem driven for Breece Hall. So I do like him as a bet in a dynasty format. He still looks like a good player to me. He still looks explosive. He still looks like he could be more of a weapon in the past. I mean, almost 10 yards per catch this past year. So definitely a passing game weapon is Breece Hall.
I will say too that maybe the more interesting conversation here for Dynasty, because there's so many unknowns with Breece Hall, is going out and trying to get them as throw-ins in a trade. Braylon Allen, who's like the forgotten man because he was injured most of this year. Isaiah Davis. Like, if you can get those guys as throw-ins and trades, there's a non-zero chance that they end up being the Jets starter next year. So I'd be looking to do that. Again, not targeting them specifically if you can avoid it. But if you're making a deal with the manager who has one of those guys, just get them to throw that guy in the deal. I guarantee they won't care about that. That won't be something that makes them, you know, change their mind on the deal as a whole. And then you have them on your bench, and they're another one of those guys that at least have a path to potentially returning value for you.
This is a good call. Yeah, I mean, there's a chance they could add somebody in the NFL draft, but why not for cheap?
Of course.
Those players you could add. Because, yeah, Braylon Allen was a player we were really excited about potentially getting some opportunity in the preseason. Yeah, ecosystem and opportunity is everything at running back. And if you can buy those guys in Dynasty, you could definitely do that. So shout out to you, you know, Michael. You can absolutely, while you're paying those fat taxes on the treadmill, walking outside is fine in the cold. I'm not a baby about the cold. I mean, I did live in LA for like 10 years. So, you know, I am a little bit of a baby about the cold still. But if you got the heated garage, as I do, shout out to me, just walk on the treadmill like Michael does. Okay. So everybody can just relax. Michael can make his dynasty trades while he's on the treadmill, and as opposed to listening to more of my blabbering. All right. That's going to do it for our dynasty debates. I'm going to end the show today with a little bit of story time because listen, fantasy football, we all know it can be frustrating to play for all of us. We all know that. Boone, even a good fantasy player like you can admit that fantasy football can be frustrating. We also know that it can be a little toxic sometimes on the internet. So I think whenever we get these good, cool stories about fantasy football, I think it's a good idea to share. So I was talking with my mom. This was a couple weeks ago. People that listen to the show know this. She has a fantasy football league called the Treviso Babes. They're very hard. They have become very hardcore, dedicated fantasy players, listeners and consumers of this show as well. I used to love breaking it down with Andy on a weekly basis when this show was a little bit more freewheeling and we could just do whatever we wanted. But I wanted to make a little space to tell this story here because I thought it was really cool. So my mom is telling me that this past off season, one of her friends that lives down in the community there in Florida, down there with the Treviso Babes, Kathleen. She's had a cancer diagnosis. She had another one kind of come back here recently. And as part of kind of like helping her get through it, they ultimately invited her into the fantasy league this past year. Kathleen, shout out. So she's no idea like how to play fantasy or anything like that. She starts out actually in September in last place, not going that well. And then as we're showing on the screen right now, her grandson, Liam, actually ends up helping her with the league. He's like, hey, you know, grandma, I can help you out with this whole thing. So like she tells me the story that he checks like her league info with for her. They'd have these weekly calls together, Kathleen and Liam, where they'd strategize about the week. He would do some research. She would do some research. They would compare the notes here. And she ultimately, with Liam's help, ends up fighting back. Well, by the way, Liam is 13 years old. He's an eighth grader. Basketball junkie, football junkie, plays basketball, plays lacrosse, the whole deal. So he's way into sports. He ends up helping his grandmother fight back into the championship semifinal here in their league. And unfortunately, I wish this story ended with, and she won the league, but because it ends with a loss in the semifinal in fantasy, it's so perfect because you're showing this on the screen here right now, the semifinals here, she loses by 1 point because she had Brock Purdy and they have their championship in week 18, which I'm trying to figure that out with mom. We got to stop doing that, mom. But Purdy throws the interception on the final pass against the Colts. So Kathleen loses a point and ultimately ends up in third place as opposed to going to the championship. But still, nevertheless, I thought a really cool story for Kathleen and Liam to fight back in this league that, you know, Kathleen was really jacked up to join because it's a big community thing down there that they do together. So pretty cool story. Kathleen, Liam, you love to see it.
Yeah, shout out Kathleen and Liam. That's great. Of course, we would have liked the Hollywood ending where it could have ended with a title and a trophy and all that sort of stuff, but that's still an awesome story. And that's what fantasy's all about, right? It's supposed to be fun. We often approach it probably too much like it could be a stock market or like, you know, I'm so competitive. Oh, yeah. I'm always trying to win and do anything I can to win. It's supposed to be a fun thing. You're supposed to walk away with great stories like this that you can retell, that you can pump everybody up and warm everybody's hearts hearing. And that's an awesome one. I'm glad you told it on the end of the show here.
Oh, no doubt. And Kathleen, again, I was talking with my mom about this. She said that their conversations together, Liam and her, you know, her grandson, really opened up like a whole new level of their relationship. I actually didn't even realize this until, you know, my phone served me one of those memories, you know, that you get or whatever. My grandma passed away 13 years ago today. So same day. And it just makes you think like how thankful you can be for those sort of things. You know, it's like a relationship between a grandmother and a grandson over freaking fantasy football, like something so Brock Purdy throwing the interception, like the bonding moment that you'll always have. Like that's something if I was Liam, I would always remember, you know, like every time I thought about the 49ers and Brock Purdy, be like that one year that, you know, grandma always almost made it back to the fantasy championship. I would always think about that. So really cool thing. You know, I watched a lot of Ravens games with my grandma. She was a big Ravens fan. Actually, she passed away the year they won the Super Bowl. So every time I see the Ravens, I think about the same thing. So just a really cool story. Fantasy football boon. It can be a very heartwarming thing, and I love the Treviso babes. Shout out to the Treviso babes, and big shout out to Liam for helping his grandmother with this. I just thought that was a cool story.
Right on. Yeah, no, that's what it's all about. And it wasn't football for me with my grandfather. It was baseball. He was a big Blue Jays fan. We've touched on the Blue Jays this year. It would have been great for him to still be around and get to see them make that run that they made this season. I'm not quite sure if any of my grandparents had any clue exactly what my job entailed, but I know a lot of my friends don't even have much of a clue exactly what our jobs entail here. So it's cool that Kathleen and Liam are bonded over it that way. And yeah, hopefully it continues. It's awesome.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, hey, my mom has this fantasy league and she's still unclear, you know, what I think she's got a good grasp of what my job is. But, you know, when I recommend somebody like Ricky Pearsall in her drafts and he doesn't play for half the season, she's always like, I thought this was your job. I thought you were good at this, which is super cool. Again, that's how me and my mom bond is, you know, we give each other some crap here. So there you go. All right. That is going to do it for the show. Special shout out again to the Treviso babes and for everybody else who sends in their dynasty base. If you've got some cool fantasy stories, we would love to hear about those as well. fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. I'd love to read some of your good fantasy stories if you've got them. And if you got dynasty debates, send those in as well. Shout out to Justin Boone again for a great show. We will be back tomorrow to preview the divisional round with Joel Smith. Going to share some favorite prop bets, stuff to keep an eye on for the weekend. That is going to be live right here, 5 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Until then, we are out.